Hey, it's Dr. Lisa, and it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. How are you doing? Hey, so we've got a great show for you today. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, the greatest radio station in the entire Western Hemisphere. I've checked because I've listened to all of them. And I'm just really glad that we're here with you today. I just came back from a vacation. It was awesome. I spent 3 days in Asbury Park alone. So anyone that, if you ever, going someplace alone is the best way to recharge. I can tell you that. It really is. It's really great. So, I just feel so much better now after not having anyone to argue with for 2 days, which is very rare for me. So before we really get started, I want to just let you in on a few things. First of all, we are trying to get Radio Free Brooklyn to South by Southwest. Did you know that? And you know what? You can help us. You have control over this, folks. Come on in and not come on in. Just go to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com, slash South by Southwest. And, good. Tom just told me the station's, I got a little, I get really nervous about this tech stuff, like I'm going to get in trouble. And Tom just told me it's okay. It's okay. So we're okay there. I can relax. Thank you, Tom. Anyway, there's only 2 more days for this. So what you need to do is go to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com/South by Southwest, and then vote for our panel. It's going to be a really amazing panel about DIY radio and local music communities, stuff that we need now more than ever, because I kind of feel like I'm kind of proud of being like something that Trump doesn't like. I'm part of that media. I'm not part of the media he doesn't like, because we don't have any real, we're nonprofit. But we can say shit about him. He wouldn't like it. If he knew what the shit that I said about him, he would not like it. I am not on his side. I am not helping him. But also on Monday, I really want you to come to this at the Footlight Bar at 465 Seneca Avenue. One of our most fabulous and lovely, gorgeous. She's really good looking, folks. Okay. So if that helps, I mean, she's also brilliant, but if that helps you get there, you might as well know it. Okay. So she's doing a show, actually a panel on, Tuke Endlow, does the, What Would Save the World, show. And it's a really great call-in argumentative type show, but she's hosting a panel of what is the role of independent political radio, with hosts from Local Vibes Radio, What Would Save the World, Objection to the Rule, I don't know. Anyway, there's going to be like a lot of really, really good people, and it's from 7 to 9. Once again, at the Footlight on 465 Seneca Avenue. What can I tell you? So I have this really awesome guest today, and I have a lot of complicated people on here. I'll give you that. But this person is not, well, I mean, whether she's complicated or she's complicated, of course, she's on this show. Of course she's complicated. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is her creative practice is fairly complicated. And I spent just the last few moments trying to like figure out how to present it to you guys. So we're going to try doing that. And then a lot of her practice involves her highly intuitive, to the point of mystical, I don't know, or what's the word? What is that word that I'm looking for? Anyway, there's a word that'll come to me in a second. But anyway, weird otherworldly shit. Okay, there. I don't know. There's a word for that, but I can't think of it right off the top of my head. But what I do want you to know is that I met her originally through the Elizabeth Foundation for the Arts program, because she is the creator and program director of that space. And it's like super impressive what she's created there. But whatever she's got going to make that happen, she is putting into, as well as making that happen. Anyway, this person has a lot. She's very capable. And I think that this is going to be a journey right here, a very interesting journey that I don't really have any idea where it's going to go. So let's say, oh, and she's, okay. So we don't have any relatives that we know of, but her name is Michelle Levy, spelled the same as mine. People are going to ask that. We don't have any relatives in common. We've been down that row. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Lisa.
Can you get a little closer to the mic?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So how did I describe you?
I think that was a great, accurate description.
Oh, accurate. Okay, that's good. So what I got from some of what you were saying was that you, when I was asking you for some of the details so I could present you properly, a lot of what I got out of it was that you were a shy person, which I don't see you as now, but I could imagine you being that way. And I think a very observant person, and that as a child, you had a lot of intuition. Intuition is kind of, I think, a fabric behind everything for you. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Closer.
Oh, can, sorry.
Yeah, I want to make sure that we get you at an optimal capacity here.
Kiss the microphone.
Okay. Yes. So anyway, so that makes sense. Okay, so I'm on the right track there, and trying to let you know what happens. I'm gonna read what Michelle wrote, what you wrote, Michelle, and then I'm gonna let you describe the project that you're working on now. How's that?
Okay.
Okay. So Michelle Levy summons the serendipitous elements that brought her to this very moment, a deja vu in a field, a religious craving, an overlooked report card that is very, very old, an old letter drafted from the sky, a grandmother's cryptic message, a Scotch sour, Poland, and possibly falafel. So I told her that this was great. This is what I said to you, Michelle, right? And I'm just sharing this. So mm-hmm. I told Michelle right away. I was like, so anyway, that'll give you an idea. That's great if you're in a performance. But, you know, for radio, we got it, especially these people. They have they're just like a bunch of, you know, unemployed people sitting in a basement somewhere. They have no attention span. So can you describe the project a little bit? And then I want to talk. As I told Michelle, we want to talk about her instincts for mysticism or deja vu or whatever you call it. So I want to get to that, but I want us to understand your project first so we can have that discussion. So go ahead.
Okay, so this project is a ongoing performance where I present my research in process, and it was started because I just out of the blue basically was invited to Prague to do curatorial research. And while I was there, an artist took me on a trip to the countryside near Poland, and I had this strange
memory. She wanted to show you the real Poland,
yes,
right?
Yes, to show me. No, we were in the Czech Republic.
So she took you on, I'm sorry, so she took you.
It was actually a
here I am, I'm screwing up the facts. So you were there as a curator.
Yes.
Or, you know, you were sort of, I mean, I find that a wow, that's a cool business trip. So you were there on a cool business trip to the Czech Republic. And while you were there, an artist wanted to show you Poland?
No, he wanted to show me the authentic Czech life.
Yeah, yeah.
So
a Czech artist.
Great. Artist who, you know, he wanted to get me out of Prague and take me.
Show you the real deal. Awesome.
Real. Yeah. So we were walking through this rural part, this field, and I just had this memory that I can't tell you what it was. It was something at first I thought it was very clear, that a story that I knew, it was connected with my grandmother's childhood and something about a retreat that with her family took her to in the country. And then the more I thought about it, I had no idea what it was or where it came from. And I still don't know what it was, but
it was like a vision.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Those words are all really corny, but I'm not familiar with them. And I know it sounds, I don't mean to like make this sound like, you know, hocus pocus, because I don't believe it is, because you're not a I'm vouching for you, Michelle. You are not a hocus pocus person, but I don't know how else to sum it up.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that I think if by chance I happened to be somewhere where my grandmother had been, I don't know. I mean, it didn't even seem that strange that I might have a
no, it probably wouldn't to you, because you're used to communicating with the world on this plane, right?
I suppose.
Yeah, so it's just normal for you. Got it.
But yeah, it made me... So my grandmother was from Eastern Europe, but we never knew exactly where she was from. She was a Jewish immigrant. She came during World War One. The borders were different. She always said she was Austrian. It was vague. And this memory just made me really want to find out where she was from. And it grew this desire to know and actually to go there and touch ground with where she was from just kept growing because she had a very difficult life when she came to the United States. And she was a woman with a hard life. And I just wanted to sort of touch base with, you know, her childhood, maybe before, while she still had some innocence and mm-hmm. happiness.
Is she alive today, or how old were you when she passed?
She passed away when I was about 22.
Oh, okay. So you grew up with her.
Yeah.
Oh, did she live near you when you were growing up?
She lived in Brooklyn. I lived in Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
We visited her
close?
A lot. Yes. But the other thing about my grandmother was for many years before she died, she had dementia. Mm. So her mind really, you know, we watched her mind deteriorate. And part of this description of that piece with the mention of this bizarre message and falafel was actually that towards the end, she started just speaking Yiddish. And then after that, she actually could only say this one phrase, which was nobody knew what it meant. It was just achel, achel. And for a long time, all she could say was achel, 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 achel. And that's how she would communicate with people. So she had once been this very extremely sharp, like, woman ahead of her time. She was politically mm-hmm. active. Mm-hmm. She was just like a whippersnapper, mm-hmm. go-getter. I don't know.
And did you ask like translators or people who might know, be able to translate that?
Nobody's been able to figure it out, but I have some theories after doing a lot of research and mm-hmm. just speculation. Mm-hmm. Because her language was sort of going backwards. Her name was Rachel, and her Yiddish name would have been Rachel, and I learned that in Polish it would have been Rachela, and maybe it was just the original sounds, like Rachel, 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 you know, something as simple as that, where
right.
it could have been...
Maybe when she was like a child learning how to say her name or something, could be pre-verbals.
Yeah.
Right on that. I thought of the word I was looking for, metaphysical.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good word.
Is that, what do you think of that word? What is that word? How does that word make you feel? Is that something that...
I don't know. I'm comfortable with it. I relate.
Oh,
I relate to it.
You're
yes.
comfortable with
yes.
it. Okay, because people have all different takes on it, and I don't assume.
Yeah.
I don't assume. Good to know. Good to know. I'm trying to find out. I learned something there, and I think that's a good word too.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so there were some freaky things about it. Like did you find a letter or something? Tell us like one of the weird things that. There is like some weird sort of quasi-coincidental metaphysical experience that happened, right?
We have to call it all coincidence, but...
Okay.
Strong
but, no, we don't have to call it anything. This is fucking fake Dr. Lisa. She gives a
oh,
shit.
Oh, but you know, I guess basically for me, I'm so back and forth between... Is this coincidence or is this something more?
Well, you're a disciplined artist, that's why.
Yeah, I'm self-critical. I have to.
Yeah,
I'm rational too.
Yeah, you're not saying it. I am. That's cool.
Okay.
Well, I'm
going
to say that. Okay. So tell us, like, there was like a bunch of weird things, but explain one of the weirdest coincidences.
Well, basically, as soon as I decided that I wanted to take this trip and I had no idea where I was going, I invited my mother to also go with me. This is her mother. We had no idea where we were going. Mm-hmm. And then she just found this report card in her living room. It was an old document that had been saved by my grandmother. We didn't know. Now that we have Google Translate, we could figure out quickly it was in Polish. Mm-hmm. And it was from 1914, mm-hmm. When my grandmother was 8. And so she did live in Poland. And it was signed by my great-grandmother. And her name is Salomea. And
you guys didn't know that was her name, even.
We didn't know anything about her.
And how'd your mom find this? Was she looking for stuff because she knew that you were going on this trip?
Yes, she was looking for stuff because we hit a wall. We couldn't find any information mm-hmm. online or anything more about our family.
Yeah, because she didn't have the internet in World War I. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, and what's interesting is when my grandmother had dementia, she started tearing up. There was this point where she was destroying all of her things. And so my mother took some of her possessions, weird. Not knowing what they were, and just filed them away and didn't look at them.
Wow.
So this was something that my grandmother had held on to, you know, mm-hmm. until she was 90.
And you know your grandmother had a very difficult childhood, right?
Yes.
And what was that? What do you know about that?
Well, I know that her family was, we believe, had to flee to the U.S. And her mother died shortly after they came here, and they were very poor, and she had to, and her father was not really good with business. So mm-hmm. she, as a very young, you know, by the time she was 15, she was working to support the family.
Her brothers and sisters.
Yeah, she had two younger brothers. So mm-hmm. So I think that I also believe she was very traumatized by the loss of her mother. Mm-hmm. Having to lose her home and be in this strange place mm-hmm. and lose her mother.
And her mother died in this country?
Her mother, we have discovered since I was doing this research, but there's no record of her death. Uh-huh. But I figured out.
No, so we're imagining like a very young, maybe pre-adolescent, a tween, that's not even funny, just coming to this country with her family and then losing her mother. I mean, the struggles. Yeah, so we don't have any idea what that's like. It's probably,
and then she had like an evil stepmother.
I'm a stepmother. I'm
sorry.
No.
Hers wasn't evil either, but she thought
stepmothers,
she was evil.
I understand, but your stepmother's tough. You have no control. Anyway, that's not the point. So there's a lot of innate sort of mystical quality around this, isn't there? Just in that where we and even thinking about it, I'm in the moment of imagining a lot of things mm-hmm. that truly happened in life that were really difficult that are attached to you, this human who's here in front of me at the moment. So there's really a lot there. Do you want to explain if we can briefly that how this translated to the performance? Because when you and I started talking about this, it was around April and you were doing or maybe it was March and you were going to do a performance at Nurture Art. Shout out Nurture Art, which mm-hmm. is a really fantastic artist organization. If you haven't been there, it's in 56 Bogart and Morgan L. But nonprofit, another great nonprofit. But anyway, can you explain a little bit about the performance that you did there?
Okay, yes. So that was actually the fourth performance from this area of inquiry, but it was a very different one because basically, the way that I perform, I do multimedia performance, sort of like a lecture with...
sort of like I saw the pictures. It's like slides and stuff like that. Like you can see it if you go to the post that I put on my Facebook page and stuff like that. It's like almost like a lecture with a slide lecture, right?
Yeah, and there's some audience participation. Uh-huh. So, but this one was different because it was at a place in the development of my learning about things where I had made a new discovery of another a woman from my family ancestry. So that performance was to introduce, I was trying to find information about my great-grandmother, Salomea, and I couldn't find more information. I actually ended up on this retreat for artists interested in Polish Jewish history because mm-hmm. I was doing this project. The mm-hmm. retreat kind of appeared.
Where'd you go?
Warsaw.
The That's so interesting. You mean you just kind of found it on the web?
Well, no. Once I started, the first performance I did related to this project, a Polish curator said, oh, you should know about this thing.
Oh, great. And so one thing led to another.
Yes, which is how this whole thing has kind of worked.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then I'm in Warsaw.
Oh, wow.
And I go to the Jewish Historical Archives to find out more about my great-grandmother. And all I can find out is that she had a brother and he had a daughter who had given a survival testimony at the end of the Holocaust. So there was a part of the family that had remained in Poland. We didn't know they existed.
So you had somebody, you had a relative that was in Auschwitz, or where was it?
She was in Poland.
Auschwitz? No. No, it said, no. You know what? I'm sorry. I got that confused because of something else I read. That's completely unrelated. That is a detour that I took by mistake. Sorry.
Oh, that is okay.
Go ahead.
So she was in Poland, and I'm saying Poland generally because mm-hmm. she actually spent the entire time of the war in many different places mm-hmm. With twists of fate where she just never ended up. Every time she was about to be sent to the camps, she was never sent. And the reason I know all of this is because there was this document that they had on file at the archives where I was.
Crazy.
And they were like, do you want it? And I had just made friends with a Polish woman artist who was also doing work about her grandmother. And we had made plans to meet because we wanted to talk about our work. So I asked her to translate the document. And it turned out to be this like feature length film type of story of a woman who just like has all these different fake papers and traveling throughout different cities, and it paints this picture of of like occupied Poland. It's really intense, and it's a whole other story.
So yeah, that is a whole story. So is that a handwritten document?
Yes,
that she wrote.
She didn't write it. It was an interview. So somebody, it was like third person.
So okay. Took it down. Oh, okay. So, but it was handwritten, transcribed from an interview. How many pages was it?
10 pages.
Yeah. So how did that feel when that woman, when you found that, and how was that experience?
I don't have words to describe it. Every time I try to describe it, I just
you should see this person's face. It's really there's a lot coming out.
It was just never, you know, the way that my process is I'm always just following a path and discovering things and surprised, but this was a surprise like no other surprise I've ever had. And I felt really like, also the woman was my age. She was in her early 40s. She, by the end of the war, she was alone. She had lost her family, and then there's no record of her after. So I sort of felt this responsibility that I need to do something with the story. I don't know what, but somehow it's come to me. It's related to my family, but it's a separate thing. So I have these two, like, I'm trying to find my great-grandmother and my grandmother's history. My grandmother's history. And then I'm also, you know, wondering, you know, what I can do with this really compelling story of this woman.
Yeah, which could be like a whole novel and a whole movie. And then so that's, and when did you get this?
So that happened. I discovered her name is Paulina. I discovered her in February. That was February.
Just this past February.
Yeah.
Like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Wow. So that must have, and you were, what did your mother say about that? I mean, that must have, like, your whole family, right?
Yeah. I mean, everybody was really surprised and couldn't wait to hear the whole story.
Did the archive give you the document?
A photocopy.
Photocopy, so it's still there.
Mm-hmm. I think that what they have there must be some old kind of copy. It's so degraded, it's really hard to read, which I also really like because there's even when I work with people who are native Polish speakers, they can't figure all of it out. And there's a lot of, different interpretations.
So that must have been really intense. So what happened after that?
So then I came back and continued to try to get a really good translation of that story. Meanwhile, I was planning this trip with my mother to go to Poland. So I had these two separate things going on.
So you came back in, say, it was February, March, and then you also had a trip planned
in
June, which you just came back from recently, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And in April, I did the presentation at Nurture Art, which was what I call a bridge between the story, the grandmother's story, and the story of finding this other woman, and a way to introduce sort of how I came about it, because it's not just a random story. It's like this, the way I came about it is so unusual. Yeah. And I wanted to have to share this, to introduce that story to the audience.
So tell us again, I want to be clear. So your grandmother, how is this person related to your grandmother?
First cousin. So my grandmother's mother, her brother, that's his daughter. So
you just went to the organization, you said, do you have any people related to this or something like that, right?
It's not that. Well, it was a long process. It was actually,
probably a huge process. Yes.
There's a genealogist that I had been working with over time. Yeah. And I got to meet her in person, but she had been working on the case.
Oh, interesting. So interesting. So how was the reaction at Nurture Art, or what did you get out of what did you get emotionally from doing the performance? Did you get the story's remarkable, of course. So did you get feedback on that, or what kind of feedback?
Yeah, I mean, I think people were really moved. I mean, the thing that I wanted to do was to hear the story again for the first time. So I broke it up into sections so that the audience would read it and not me. And so there were 20 sections, and it was amazing. People were so well organized and behaved and respectful. And I asked them to not read it beforehand so that, because I wanted them to be discovering it as they read it. And, you know, it included some of my notations and some ways of how to pronounce mm-hmm. things that I think are the way to pronounce things. So it's a lot of layers of translation. And people were very moved because they became a part of the story and they were inside of the performance.
Yeah, fascinating. Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. So did that, what did you learn about yourself, or what did you get from that? Was it like that you got to feel closer to your relative or see it in other people's eyes? Or
I think it was more seeing it in other people's eyes. I'm really interested in not just my own perspective, but how, a sort of universal perspective plays a role in the things that I'm exploring, and or how something personal that I'm exploring is really universal. So
right.
Hearing how other people respond is really useful, and actually one of the most important things.
Yeah, because your story is universal. I mean, even for me right in the moment, like thinking like my name is the same spelling certainly as your last name, and like this, you like, it's giving me the chills thinking this is one of my relatives. And how many, I mean, as a Jew, we are all in that boat, but it does extend a lot beyond Jews, and you can make a lot of very similar comparisons between all sorts of cultures, people who have been forced to leave their countries, people who have chosen under difficult circumstances to leave their countries, mm-hmm. and, also, even the concept right now, thinking about what leaving your country means, because mm-hmm. for one thing, all this crap that clown car has brought up for us is actually, I think, renewing a lot of patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
We identify with our country more than we may know. So I want to just remind people how great it is that they're having this opportunity to listen to us talk about this amazing project via Radio Free Brooklyn. Hi, I'm Dr. Lisa, and Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. We're exploring a fascinating multi-level journey that Michelle Levy is on. And, it's a good time to chip in and give us some money for our nonprofit. The money is tax deductible, but you don't even have to give us very much. Just go to radiofreebrooklyn.com or .org/pledge, or it's really easy. You can go to Facebook and donate money to us on Radio Free Brooklyn. It's easy. It's easy. And you know what? I promise you, it will make you feel good. Okay. So let's see where we are with the project. That must have had a profound effect. Obviously. Yes. So where are you now? What did what happened after the reading? What happened? Like, what? How did that affect your trip in June?
Well, it's interesting because I was very much unsure of how those two things should be together. You know, like, I was taking my mother on this trip, and this was sort of a separate story than that story, and I didn't want to distract from the grandmother's
right
channeling of the grandmothers, or whatever you want to call it. But I got to actually present, do this performance again in Krakow when I was there. I was invited.
Wow.
Yeah, because there is a theater maker there, Michael Rubinfeld. He's not Polish.
A Jew, though.
And he also has been doing a theater work about going to Poland with his mother to visit where their family was from. And so it was very coincidental. And when he heard about my research, he basically turned his home into a venue and invited people, and we got to perform.
So your mom got to see it.
I said we got to perform because my mom came with me and she was videotaping it. So.
So
was part of it.
So you got to do that with her there.
Yeah.
And that must have been really amazing.
Yeah, it was really interesting because there was a, you know, it was like a half Polish audience too, and to have Polish women, a Polish Jewish woman reading an English translation of a Polish document of a woman from Krakow, now in Krakow. It's, you know, so many layers.
So it's intense. So your mom had that experience too. And so what happened in June? Like, what happened? You said you went to visit a clairvoyant before you went.
I consulted. I don't know what you'd call her, a spiritual guide.
Mm-hmm.
She's someone that I've, another artist put me in touch with, and she's extremely intuitive. Who can explain where it comes from? But she just can, through Skype, without even looking at me, without even video Skype, she can tell you more about this has been my experience. She can tell you more about yourself than somebody that you've known for quite a while.
Wow.
So I thought, what the hey, you know?
Yeah, right.
I have all this stuff happening.
What the hell?
What the hell? Because, you know, my mother and I, we hired a guide. We knew we were going to an area of Poland where there was nothing left. There's nothing to look for. We were just going to this place.
Yes.
And so I wanted some
guidance
or just like some rules to give myself. And, you know, talking
smart
to a person who thinks in those planes was a good idea. But what was interesting was that, you know, she actually connected with. So, you know, I was like, I have all these things coming at me and I don't know if they're all connected or they feel important, but maybe they're not important. And, you know, she said they're all important, that the Paulina, which is the relative that I discovered later on, is important in a different way, not connected to the grandmothers, but that actually my great-grandmother, Salomea, the message was that this sort of, there was this healing that needed to happen. And by starting on this process that I had already started, like it was moving things around, and that there was just this stagnant energy, and that basically my grandmother and great-grandmother were really excited to sort of show us the way when we get to Poland.
Right. So you would say that she was like a medium that contacted the dead.
I don't, you know, who,
or she,
I, it's
she
inexplicable.
Had that. Well, yeah, she had, but
inexplicable. I mean, but yes,
you know, these are things that are hard to talk about because there's no literal way to discuss them. But
the one thing I will say was there was a moment when she was talking about my grandmother and my great grandmother, and she said they were so close, they were standing right next to me, and then I felt these crazy chills going up and down my spine. And I don't, you know, again, who knows what any of this
it doesn't
is.
Yeah, I mean, it's your experience, and that's what we're talking about, and we can't, God knows, we cannot explain the human experience, that's for sure. So what happened, so that happened, you got to perform that again with your mom there, which must have been hugely gratifying and exciting. But what else came out of it?
We hired a guide to take us to the region where my grandmother was from. And that was just a few days in the countryside, like southern Poland, a few hours from Krakow. And that was very difficult because in order to find any information, you have to go to the oldest person in the town who holds the memory of that town. I mean, people told us this would happen, and I was like, that's not how it's going to work. But that's really how it works. And so
there are towns there. Let's just, it's like a village from like 100 years ago or 200 years ago, sort of.
I would say older yeah. than that. But a lot, the thing with Poland is so much had been destroyed from the war. So right. There's a lot of new, you know, things have been built back
right.
since the war.
But the lifestyle is really very
rural.
hard for us Americans to even imagine.
Slow, rural country.
It's funny because it's hard to imagine some of this metaphysical stuff, but even the real stuff is hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that you go and someone says, go to this house. They describe the house. They don't even give you the address. You go and and they don't know the name of the person, but that's the old person in the town that has the history.
So did you speak to a bunch of people?
Mm-hmm. Well, directly because our translator did it for us.
Oh, okay. So tell us one story about the old person that you saw.
Okay, well, we were looking for the school that my grandmother went to because we had her report card. Mm-hmm. So we went to the town of the school and we went to this the town guru, this wonderful old lady who you have to hear stories. If you're Jewish and you show up to an old Polish home with someone who remembers the war, they want to tell you stories of their experiences. So she was very kind, very lovely. She gave us cake and she she told a lot of her memories of she was very close with the Jewish families in the town. Mm-hmm. So we were there. I mean, it's like you have to slow down. I mean, we were
she
there for like an hour.
Yeah, she wasn't a Jew. She wasn't Jewish herself.
No, there's
which
no,
is may why she does. She survived,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So did she have any information that was specific to you?
Yes, she was able to tell us where the school was.
Oh,
which we couldn't find otherwise.
Oh, I see.
So, and she called me a Shana Shiksa, which apparently is a compliment.
A good-looking non-Jew.
Yes.
Okay.
But I guess the Jews at the time, and you know, if you say this, oh, you look like a shiksa, it was a compliment. I don't know.
I think you're right, because I, as a young child, I think I was called a shiksa a few times myself by relatives.
Yeah, but this woman was proud.
Which is crazy, yeah. But.
Yeah, she was just like happy to share her few Yiddish words that she remembered. Mm-hmm. But there are no Jewish people left in that part of Poland.
Sad.
There are in the cities or other areas, and I'm not an expert in where the Jewish people are.
No, I get it. Well, it sounds really fascinating. I mean, it sounds like really a dive into a completely different culture that we don't even know exists. And this is Europe we're talking about,
yeah.
Right? And would you have ever imagined? I mean, I can't even picture that would even exist in Europe right now.
No, and it was amazing because it just like was so beautiful. The land that my family was from, and to just know, like, and they were landowners too. Not that we're going to reclaim any of this land. there's a lot. I actually saw a lot of land that could have that could be our
own land. Yeah,
and it's, you know, it just kind of.
So what does this? I mean, it's a fascinating story. I wish we had a 3-hour program, but. So what are you going to, because I want to talk a little bit about the metaphysical stuff too.
Okay.
So, just from your experience, but, so what has this inspired you, or what's the next steps?
I'm working with the material now. I'm planning another performance and I think it will actually end up becoming, more like a video as well. Like, so, over the next 6 months, I'm working on a piece that sort of explores.
Are you going to be explaining? Is it more of a storytelling piece? Because the thing that I really liked, I mean, not good or bad, not that it shouldn't be, but I mean, it's also interesting that you used the performance to sort of get some observation or distance.
Yeah.
So, is it going to have that element, or are you just trying to like actually kind of get your arms around what the story is?
I'm trying to get my arms around it. I think it's too soon to say specifically with this part, with this going to Poland with my mother and that I'm still just figuring out what that is. The other story, the Paulina, that thing, Yeah. I do that. There's going to be a lot more performance research.
Okay. So you're still working on that?
Yeah. That's like, I think, going to be a long term. That's different. Yeah.
So how did this affect your relationship with your mother, all this stuff? It must be rewarding.
I think it was very rewarding.
Do you feel closer to her, or did you have conversations? Did you hear about her life more?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we never spent that much. I mean, we have spent that much time together. That's a lie, but not in that way. We've never traveled together. Mm-hmm. And we traveled together very well. And we were faced with a lot of difficult moments because we were dealing with difficult history, but we you know, figured out how to talk through it all. And I think it was, I think, you know, my mother said that she felt her, when we went to the town where my grandmother was, we were driving down the street, my mother said that she felt her mother. She felt her mother there, and she's not a spiritual person.
Right.
So that really, to me, was like a reward, because I feel like I provided, you know, not to take all the credit, but you know.
Oh, go ahead. Everybody, a lot of people around here would.
I facilitated this experience that she wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah, you did. And how about your dad? Is he around, or?
My dad is around, yes.
He's not
involved.
That's
a complicated story. No, he's not. He's not.
Are your parents divorced?
My parents are divorced. My parents are very divorced.
Oh, okay. That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
But I find this really fascinating, and I'm excited to keep track of it. I mean, you'll have to come back and keep in touch and let us know how this progresses, because it's clearly you're in the middle of
this. In the middle, totally in the middle.
And it's hard to tell. So I wanted to have some information, because I don't really get to talk that often with people who have some metaphysical experiences, and or people who, there's been a resurgence, let's say, maybe in my life, in my world, or something that I've been called upon to think about more, maybe not, I don't know. But all this stuff of you know, imagining, not imagining, but, you know, the whole world of psychics and tarot cards and all that stuff, you know, mediums. It's just something that is part of our becoming. It's actually growing in our society, don't you think?
It does. I do think so.
But I wanted to know your take on it personally. Like, I feel like even talking about it is, in a certain way, making fun of you, which I don't want to do. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a cynicism about it. And how does somebody like me avoid, like, I'm afraid. I mean, I have, or it's not just you, but I don't know how to navigate this. And I'm wondering, like, maybe there would be a way for me to understand, because I'm imagining that you're a very observant person and that you may pick up on a lot of things. So can you explain to me, for you, your experience between what's just out there on the tangible level and then how you get these vibes or intuitions, or can you explain that in some ways, and where you think that comes from?
It's hard to explain it, because it's not something that I necessarily can see a distinction between. Actually, someone just recently asked, do you give tutoring and becoming more intuitive?
No.
And I thought, I need to understand what it is myself, because it's just a way in which I sort of go about my day. And it's like, I have to say that I'm also quite skeptical, and I have this very rational side. So there are things that I will notice and observe, and then say, you know, a lot of times I'll just say that's just coincidence. But I'm really interested in noticing coincidences, because I think it's a coincidence that we exist, and so coincidences can be just as phenomenal or feel metaphysical, actually, as something that was, you know, coming from some other power.
There is some exploitation of it, isn't there? I mean, as far as, that's a rhetorical question, rhetoric, like our leader, which is so obnoxious, isn't it, Lisa? So anyway, we're learning here. We're all learning. But the problem is, this is the problem I have, because I am interested in this stuff. But on one hand, there is so much of an exploitation of it, right? Palm readers and all this stuff. Yeah. And how do you maintain integrity? You know, how am I supposed to take all this shit? Do you believe in tarot card readers or any of that stuff?
I believe that there are some things we can't explain, and there are some people who have abilities beyond, you know, what is explainable. I think there are a lot of people who are just good at manipulating people. So that is, you know, and we should be skeptical. I think it's a good thing to be skeptical. There's a symbolism in tarot card reading that has archetypes that go back hundreds of years and connect with some sort of more collective understanding, you know, that I don't know scientifically how genetic memory works or any of that, but there are things that we inherit. Mm-hmm. So I think that as far as understanding like how to categorize and tell stories about people's lives in ways that they can understand or relate to it, you know, that does make sense to me. And
But do you find that when you're talking about your artwork personally, that you have trouble navigating that space of like, I mean, I have genuine respect for you, and you know that. And I take this project, you know, what you're saying, seriously at face value, of course. So there's no question there. I'm not, you know, there's no question. But anyway, so you're authentic. We know this. But do you personally feel like you have to navigate that space, cynical people like me, maybe, you're talking about your work, and does it make you uncomfortable?
Absolutely. It probably did, especially, you know, if someone's like trying to mansplain to me about it or something, but which does happen. But I think that to me, I'm exploring, like I use myself as a subject, but I feel like I represent this kind of, I'm trying to represent everybody's like search for belief, like and we all don't follow, you know, we're not all completely rational when we're deciding what we believe in, and we have these associations that come from what we're surrounded with in pop culture and the people that we've been around.
So, do you have religious beliefs?
No.
Okay, that's interesting. No. And then the other thing is, we've only got 10 minutes left, but I just wanted to know if there's something maybe unexplained in your life that you're looking for explanation for.
Well, I just think,
like, maybe your relationship with your dad.
Maybe I don't,
which I have no idea about.
I don't have. I actually do think that a lot of the mystery with the women, you know, with my there's something about the women, the female line in my family that I feel is missing information still. And I don't know.
But I wonder what motivated you to actually, what in you is driven to explore this? You know what I mean?
You know, I have so many different answers for this. One answer is
I would expect you would.
Yeah. I mean, one answer is that I was chronically ill as a child, and I was, and I had just a lot of things to over physical.
Really? What kind of illness? You look so healthy now. You don't mind me asking.
No, it wasn't anything.
Just like sickly kid.
I have a very, you know, very bad respiratory problems.
Asthma stuff.
I'm not going to get into the details affected my life very deeply.
Okay, sure.
And I have had just a history of, you know, that I would rather not get into deeply, but
good.
A history of physical ailments and some psychological struggles, and just a lot to get through. And also some, speaking of my father also has some ailments and psychological struggles that I had to also get through with him.
Do you feel like there's a biological connection between you and him?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, do you feel like you've inherited those?
I think so, or to some extent. But I feel like I was always looking at these just sort of like seeking ways of my own version of transcendence, how to transcend like these mm-hmm. problems or address them or face them in a way that they're interesting instead of horrible, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing. And the other thing is that, you know, because my family, they were religious back, you know, several generations, and the spirituality level of spirituality, at least in my direct line, had sort of waned, mm-hmm. but I was sort of introduced to Judaism as a child, and I actually really liked the a lot of aspects of it, but my parents weren't religious, so as soon as they decided to stop going to temple, I stopped going
to
temple too.
Did you go to Hebrew school or anything like
that? I went to Hebrew school. I had a bat mitzvah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. I did a lot of the Jewish observance.
That's for real.
I really respected the rabbi that we had at our mm-hmm. temple, and some of the experiences I had in temple, I feel funny saying a little weird saying this now, but it really, those really inspired me, and I was missing, I didn't believe in God though. Mm-hmm. And once my family stopped going, I was like, oh, I'll do other things. Mm-hmm. But I was missing this something having to do with coming together and like
the community
and also just this self-exploration that mm-hmm. is not just like going to therapy. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I can sort of see that making sense, because I mean, one of the things about religious organizations, especially like, I mean, I kind of, you know, I wasn't bat mitzvah or anything, but I grew up in a fairly Jewish, you know, whatever. I mean, I know a little bit of a taste of what you speak. And there is like something you know, it's something bigger than yourself, for mm-hmm. sure. And religion is something bigger than yourself. And you can talk about it and it's interesting because, I mean, sort of what we're talking about, how much is metaphysical and how much is real. And religion attacks or addresses that very directly, but it still doesn't have an answer. And there are no answers. And it's all very individual, what you think is real and what you think is, not real, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, there must have been that feeling of community that was based on a history.
Yes. Yes. There was a feeling of community, and there was some ritual, like an element of ritual that, right. I really enjoyed. also just this sort of, I don't know.
I can see what you're talking about, because in a way it's kind of like going to, say, synagogue. That's what you and I know the best. Going to a synagogue and doing the rituals, the prayers together and the standing up and kneeling and all that is a group activity based mm-hmm. on some history that you all have together, something right. bigger than everything everybody has themselves. And I think that was very similar to what you did with your project and having everybody read.
Yeah, it's sort of like a Passover Seder or something.
Yeah. And so there's something about that that you miss. And also, if you say you are a shy person, you know, we all learn how to compensate for shyness as we get older, and you're in your 40s, but I can imagine maybe in your 20s or something. Something like that is a great way to feel like you're part of a community and you're doing things together. And you're mm-hmm. doing something positive together.
Yeah.
Honoring each other and you know, having good values and all that stuff. I could see how one might miss that.
Yeah. I mean, miss it, but not in a way that I want to return to it.
Right.
But that I want to figure out why that I miss it and sort of create my own as a way of exploring what that is, you know.
But it's interesting because it's so complicated, and so the path that you're on is also, because it is really funny. It's almost like you're trying to recreate a religion, but you don't want to be the God.
I'm just somebody else. Yeah, someone else can be the God.
That's great. Well, I'm thoroughly impressed with your, abilities and your tenacity and all that stuff. And I know you listeners are too. Isn't it great? There was one more thing that I wanted to say or ask, and just give me a second. It's a lot. It's a lot to digest, and it's a lot to think about. Oh, I remember now. So I want you. This is what I don't give out advice, and this isn't advice. This is just what I want for you personally. This is about me, okay. Wanting something for you. I want you to really own the legitimacy of the, you know, metaphysical hocus pocus aspect of your journey, mm-hmm. and not feel like you have to explain it or you know, expect doubt for it. Because I think that you have integrity in it, and I think your heart is in the right place, and I think it is really impossible. I mean, we just spent an hour here, and I still couldn't really, you know, we still can't cut it up and slice it and package it. So I'm just saying that, you know, in order to continue your work productively, I would love to see you really own that metaphysical, for lack of a better word, aspect of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you think about it, when you talk about it, and when you're in touch with it.
Thank you. Okay.
Good?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So we've got 3 minutes left and just enough time for me to get you to hang in here and listen to the person that's going to follow me, or I should say the show, which is the wonderful Ilan Danziger. You know, I've had Ilan over to my house a couple times. We've had a few Radio Free Brooklyn soirees, and I really, really like Ilan. There's just something really, like, so you know, he's just so accepting. He's a really easy, like, I mean, honestly, if my husband, like, he's so easy to deal with and so thoughtful, and I just wish my husband had some of the qualities that Ilan has. But that's my husband calling me right now. Listen to this. Phil, did you hear me making fun of you on the air? Is that why you called? Yeah, I was saying that, yeah, see, this is really funny because we were having this talk about psychics and metaphysical, and I was saying that I wish you were a little more like Ilan, the show that's on, the host of the show that's on next, because he's just so easy to get along with and and all that stuff. So anyway, that's what I said. So thanks for calling, but I got to go because I've got a minute and a half yet. Why did you call, though? See what I'm saying? My husband is calling me to invite me to lunch because he doesn't even remember. He doesn't give a fuck about my radio show. The one thing I have scheduled every week that I care about, and you don't even fucking remember it. I love you, honey. I love you so much. I love you so much. Goodbye. That's what being married is like. So make sure you hang in there and stay tuned for Ilan, who does Lost and Rewound, and he carries around, he carried around a tape recorder in the mid-90s when he was a middle schooler, and he has stories and mixtape stuff, and he's amazing. And also, please come by on Monday night on the 28th to the Footlight, because I'm going to be there, and I think the panel discussion is going to be fascinating. What is the role of independent political talk radio? And we've got to find out that, because we gotta stick in this. You know, this whole administration has to bind us together. And please support the Elizabeth Foundation for the Arts while you're at it, okay? It's